Hi there. Welcome to Extra Innings, covering all the bases. My name is Albert Dabba. I am a filmmaker, a therapist, and a life coach. And as I've been doing this program, I find myself being a mental health advocate. Extra Innings, covering all the bases, deals with subjects such as mental wellness, bipolar disorder, anxiety disorder, depression, people with all kinds of challenges, including suicide attempts. I've talked to many different people from all kinds of professions since January when we started the show, and it really has enlightened me on having all these different guests. We've had writers, artists, and tonight we have two wonderful people from the film, one a cast member, one a producer, and I'll also say casting director on the film. And in these discussions, we've talked a lot about the stigma of mental illness, which I believe is really rampant, even though maybe it's lessened a bit, but it's a universal problem. We're not just talking about this country. We're talking about all over the world. We had the good fortune to work with a company called SAVE, a suicide prevention agency, with a Dr. Dan Reidenberg, who's the director. He became a fiscal partner of the film because the film that I wrote, Extra Innings, he felt was really authentic. And we'll get to that a little later in the show. So, again, the name Extra Innings comes from a film I made. I wrote the film, produced it, directed it, and acted in it. And it is now playing on about 7 different platforms. It just included 2 different platforms, including Peacock. It's been on Amazon for quite a while. And now we're selling it right off our website as well, SimbaMovies.com. So, let's begin the show tonight by introducing Juliette Lamond and Victoria Rick. Let's start with Juliette. Juliette, we met under circumstances that were a little bit different from the norm. And I remember, I believe you were in your last year at NYU when you came to my office. And why don't you tell the audience a little bit about our first meeting? Unmute. Can't hear you.
I remember I first read the synopsis I was looking for an internship, and I read the synopsis for Extra Innings, and I just got really excited because, you know, I, in my personal life, was really focusing on my own mental health. And I had lost someone close to me to suicide, you know, maybe 2 years prior to that. And so I thought, I really just wanted to meet with Albert and just to, you know, I wanted to meet with you and just talk about the film. And I wanted to help in any way that I could. And since I was about to graduate, yeah, I thought that it would be a really good opportunity. And so we met, and that was the beginning.
No, I remember that very well. I think when you first met with me, you were still in school. Is that right? I think you were still, yeah. And when you graduated in May, what I remember, if correctly, that you came to me and you said, "So are we doing the film?" And my response was, I just had someone who I hired to raise money to make the film, and it didn't work out at all. And I was very frustrated, and it was that summer that I really wanted to make the film, and the summer before I wanted to as well. But we tried all kinds of ways to raise money. But at this particular time, we made a connection with Dr. Reidenberg, which helped a great bit because we were able, being a fiscal partner, we were able to raise some money, and it was all the donations that people gave were all tax deductible, and it went through SAVE. They got a certain percentage from it as well. And but I still wasn't sure. I still didn't have enough money to make the film. I was working with all kinds of budgets and all this, and it was many years that I was trying to make the film. And I think you said something, why don't we just try casting it? Now, I said, okay. However, I knew that I was getting into something that I was going to say, Albert, don't regret this, but if you start casting the film and see people you like, you're in. And that's exactly what happened. So Juliet really was an incredible help on starting the film, going by doing the casting. And at that point, we have one character who plays a young David. So we did use the casting director for that, because young kids like 11, 12 don't have a lot. And that's how we found a lot of our people, was by looking at their footage on different websites. And they came in and it became really exciting. And we had other interns working and they all helped out. And the casting process to me was something that was really exciting, because I spent many years in Simba Productions, which produced the money, the movie, along with Ocean Parkway Productions. And I spent a lot of time shooting casting sessions for major movies, all kinds of independent films, commercials. We worked with all kinds of directors, you know, the top 10 directors, top 10 actors and all that. And I got to read a lot of scripts during that time. And as we were casting it, you were my right-hand person there, and we in terms of helping out. And I believe we ended up getting a wonderful cast. Now, turn to Victoria, because Victoria, I'll never forget that the day that you came in and we were casting. And you were one of the later ones in the days to come. And we were seeing excellent women for your part. I don't know if you remember that, Juliet, but I remember saying, wow, she's really good. After each one came, wow, she's really good. You know, she's really good. And you came in. And I think we usually began the casting session by tell us about yourself. And boy, you can talk. I thought I could talk, but you could talk. And you went on, you described yourself, but you were so, with so much expression that I was like, wow. We didn't even start the audition. I was ready to give you the part. And then we did it. And I remember, I think there was a callback with the character of Morris that you guys played together. Am I right on that? Do you remember that? And it was amazing. Like, because every word meant something. So tell us a little bit about yourself, Victoria, because you're not from this country. And tell us about how you got into extra innings, how you got involved in the film, and where were you before that? You have to unmute. Victoria, unmute.
Yep. Hello, I'm here.
Now we hear you. Okay.
Well, hello, everybody. Well, I'm from Bolivia. I've been acting for 16 years. I studied acting in Spain. I also studied directing and scriptwriting. I'm an architect, et cetera. I love it. And I moved to New York. It was like 4 months before I met you. So it was one of my first auditions I did in New York. I got my papers, my working papers, and that was it. I was full of accent still. I'm still on, but I'm getting better. And the thing is that I come from a poor country. Even I'm middle class, normal person. I'm very lucky in that respect. But I know many people that have gone through situations like that, that they were middle class in my country. There was a huge crisis in 2008, like, you know, the response of the crisis in the United States, it was a global thing. And before in 97, it was another very huge one. And many people from underdeveloped countries, which I hate the word, adjective, it's very ugly, but I don't know how to say it, another word. They went to developed countries, again, I hate the word, to find a better future. And many of the most of those were women, because for women it's easier to find jobs. You don't have papers as an immigrant. It's like Bolivian women are very famous for taking care of people, working with old people. They're very, very, and with children, they are full of love. And many of these women that end up cleaning houses were engineers, doctors. It's a whole phenomenon of migration that you can be a middle class, and when you arrive to a country like this, you have to have a life that is very different to what you were used to, and very sad, away from your family, away from your kids. So you see this phenomenon of families that they're separated, full of trauma, really.
Right. Let me ask you, what was it like? We're going to have a commercial in 2 minutes. What was it like on the audition for you? How did that audition go for you? How did you feel about it?
Well, I remember that it was not a normal audition in the sense that there was a camera, of course, but it was a sofa. But I already knew the connected with the line. So for me, it was pretty easy. Mm-hmm. It was pretty, pretty easy. And when I met Ramos Morris, what's the name of the actor? Ramos.
Robert.
He's fantastic. Robert. He's Robert. Fantastic.
Yeah.
So, you know, when you're performing, it's a dance between two people. And when the other actor is good, your job is easier. And he's that. He's fantastic. Fantastic.
Yeah.
He's
yeah.
doing very good, actually.
Yeah, and I'll just tell you real quickly. Rob is having a nice job right now. And when I saw him in a play, how we cast him was he was in a play, and I knew the director, and I asked the director at intermission, can I meet with him? Because it was towards the end of the, right before intermission, I said, oh my God, this guy would be a perfect older brother for the film. And I auditioned him a week later, and he came by, and we weren't even auditioning at the time. And I'll get back to that audition later. But when you guys met and did your scene together, it was like, I mean, I'm talking before we filmed, it was just fantastic. So we'll come back in a minute with Juliet and Victoria, and we'll talk with Juliet about maybe some of the casting and then what happened after that, the how we approached it. All right, we'll be right back with Juliet and Victoria in just about a minute. Thank you.
Are you a business owner? Do you want to be a business owner? Do you work with business owners? Hi, I'm Stephen Fry, your small and medium-sized business or SMB guy, and I'm the host of the new show, Always Friday. While I love to have fun on my show, we take those Friday feelings of freedom and clarity to discuss popular topics on the minds of SMBs today. Please join me and my various special guests on Friday at 11 a.m. on talkradio.nyc.
Are you a conscious co-creator? Are you on a quest to raise your vibration and your consciousness? I'm Sam Liebowitz, your conscious consultant, and on my show, The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, we will touch upon all these topics and more. Listen live at our new time on Thursdays at 12 noon Eastern Time. That's The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, Thursdays, 12 noon on talkradio.nyc.
Are you interested in having a better relationship with yourself, others, and God? Greetings. I'm your host, Dr. George Andow, for the show, A Journey Through Into Awareness. On my show, we journey into the awareness that the mind of God is the true seat of our personal consciousness. We join together each Monday at 7 p.m., so tune in on Talk Radio NYC.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC. Uplift, educate, empower.
Hi, we're back with Juliet and Victoria here at Extra Innings, covering all the bases. So, Juliet, when we started casting the film, how did you feel about it? What was your first impression when we actually started the casting of it? Because I know you were directly involved. What was it like for you, your experience?
I remember starting and then very quickly getting overwhelmed because I think first we were just casting just the two of us.
Right.
We didn't have any other help. We just started looking online. We started putting up postings. And I remember at one point I came up to you and I said, you know, I need some help because it was a lot. It was a lot of people interested. There are a lot of really talented actors out there, and I just need help like going through the different people who are applying for the parts. And so once we got some interns in, it became much easier, and we just had so many talented actors come in. Really, it was really hard to, I remember we were really close between like some actors for some parts. We really were going back and forth discussing, just because there's so much amazing people that came in to audition.
Yeah. You remember the time that we were trying to decide on the younger David? And I think I called in 6 or 7 people to watch the auditions of both the younger Davids. And one of them was supposed to go to on a cruise. And we were going to have rehearsal time during that week. And I said, well, forget about the fact that he's going away. Let's just, who do we think would be the best job for this? And you don't really know for sure. You know, the way I felt at the time was a couple of things. The characters that were cast were the family members for the most part. Then there was the character of Maria, which Victoria played, which is a crucial part in the film. And we had the best friend. And every character was important. The girlfriend, Simone, she was actually on the show last week with Alex, who played the older brother. And there were 3 scenes that had to do with the family sitting down at dinner. And I felt that all these scenes had to really work together and that we had to have a good connection. But most of all, I felt that not just the actors, but the crew had to have an understanding of what this film was about, that it was based on a true story, that it was based on a family that had these major challenges to deal with. And me being the writer and director, you know, I wanted to make it as, I guess, as easy as possible. Not easy is not the word, but just as flexible as possible for everyone. And I remember saying to all the actors, if you think this line doesn't work for you, let me know. I want it to come from the heart. And what I've heard from many people from showing the film live before COVID, about 20 times doing talkbacks and Q&As, that for the majority of the people, the film really hit personally with a lot of people. And I still, you know, hear that till this day. And I'm very proud of that. And I'm proud of the crew that we had all the way through, of all the extras we had. And I remember you were very, you were out, going out, getting extras besides the casting. And I believe we gave you as a credit as a producer or assistant producer as well, because you were there from the beginning and you did a lot of work. And also it was something personal to you by you losing your friend a couple of years beforehand. And that's a tough place to be in. And I believe that there are other people working on the crew and cast that had some connections to mental illness from family, friends, or whatever. So, Victoria, what was it like for you? I mean, you were in the scenes mostly with Morris and the family, and they were emotional scenes. They were also very sweet scenes. They're scenes that I'll never forget. When you're sitting because those scenes that you're in are scenes that I never really saw. I wrote them up being what I felt was happening, overheard, but I wasn't in the room watching them. And I knew there was a great affection that my brother had to a housekeeper that was a live-in housekeeper for a couple of years or a year. I don't remember how long. And so how did it feel to you to be, one of the great scenes with you, I remember, is when you're walking up the stairs with Gertrude, who plays the mother, and she's just talking the way my mother talked, just blurting out this and that. And yes, this is your room, and I have a son, and he's sick, and they say he's depressed, they say he's schizophrenic, and there's the long pause, and you say, "I'm sorry." And it was so, came out to me so meaningful. And her reaction was like, okay, you know. And then the scene when you're with him in the room and talking to him and said, "Right, just right." And he goes, "I'm stuck." What was it like for you to be on the other end of that, of those scenes, working with Robert, who plays Morris?
I think that what I did was to find the points of connection between the life of Morris and my own Morris, and my own life, my character's life, in the sense that loneliness, disconnection, and pain, emotional pain, is the same. So there were these points that us human beings put this person, these people that had come from different upbringings, different realities come together and understand each other as a very intimate way. And I found that that's the way you wrote it. Mm-hmm. That's why they can see each other. And they really see each other.
There is a good friend of mine who watched the film, who knew about the film, who read the script. And one night, she wrote me a text and said I didn't know she was in that much pain at the time. And she said to me, this is after she saw the film, she said, "I feel like your brother when he says, 'I'm stuck.' Because there's a point when you say, you know, 'Why don't you just write?' And he goes, 'I'm stuck.'" And she felt like that in her own life, not that she wanted to write, but stuck in her life of, where does she want to go? And in that feeling, you can feel extremely lonely, like you're the only one. And I listened to a great podcast the other day of this rabbi. I just happened to find it somewhere. And he lost his daughter to suicide, a 17-year-old daughter. And he was very open about it. One of the things he said that really made sense to me was, you know, he said something like, we live in a broken world. There's all kinds of tragedies. There's all kinds of stuff. Everyone feels something at some point that's extremely painful. You know, there's grief from loss of life or whatever it is. And he said, it's important in life to have an attachment, to have someone that you can talk to. And it could be a therapist. It can be your lover, it could be your husband, your wife, a best friend, but someone that for you to help feel that you're not alone with this. And the big word that came out in that, and with other therapists that I've spoke to, was having empathy. And I think that is easier said than done. What does empathy really mean? But I think it's really like being there with that person the way you were with Morris, exactly in that scene, being there, listening, and, you know, saying what you feel and trying to help. And I think that's, you know, as a society, we need to do more of that. We need to not be afraid to say, what can I do for you? How can I help? And it doesn't always end up the way you'd like it to end up. But like, there are people I spoke to and said, "Oh yeah, I went to a therapist once and they were the worst," you know? And well, it's like, you can go to any doctor and
you change therapy. Yeah, therapy.
A Right. You go to a doctor and you go in there for a problem with your foot and he does nothing. And so what do? You should go to another doctor. You know, if the pain's still there, then and he's not the right doctor for you. It's the same thing for a therapist. And I believe there still is a stigma of, you know, talking about going to a therapist.
I've gone to therapy like 19 years of my life.
Okay.
When I was a teenager, I was very depressed and sad. I was very different to my peers. Felt my life is very different to my peers. My choices are, my way of being is very different. So I felt very isolated. And I asked my parents to find me a doctor. I wanted to go to the psychologist, find therapy. And it didn't work because for them was if I don't know, did something weird or fight with them or something, hey, didn't you go to the therapy today? It was like, didn't you took your magical pill? I got so angry that I had to like quit because it was like this idea of what therapy was so wrong, really, really wrong.
Yeah,
and it took me many years to find a person that helped me. Many, many years.
Yeah, no, that's an excellent point because, you know, when you're younger and you're not feeling like you're feeling alone, like you're not fitting in, something's not, you know, clicking. And I know my father didn't believe in therapy at all. And he thought it was a waste of time. He didn't see the results he wanted to see. And he thought it was like, you know, like you said, taking a pill. Okay, you don't feel good. Take an Advil. You know, you'll feel better. It's not that kind of pain. So, and on this show, we talk a lot about that. How do you deal with that? You know, these are, you know, important challenges that, again, I'll say it again, that are universal. Anyway, when we come back, we'll talk more about, you know, what's going on presently with Juliet and Victoria. As we stop for another commercial. All right, see you in a little bit. Thank you again.
Howdy, I am Joseph Franklin McElroy, host of the new podcast, Gateway to the Smokies. It airs on talkradio.nyc every Tuesday night from 6 p.m. to 7. Every episode is dedicated to memorable experiences in the Great Smoky Mountains National Park and surrounding areas. This show features experts and locals who will expound upon the richness of culture, history, and adventure that awaits you in the Smokies. Tune in every Tuesday from 6 p.m. to 7 on talkradio.nyc.
Are you a cannabis enthusiast, a cannabis professional, or interested in entering the cannabis space? I'm Johnny Tsunami, and this is Planet Baco Lolo, a less taboo view. On our show, we will discuss the cannabis world through the perspective of various cannabis professionals. Tune in every Thursday evening, Eastern Standard Time, 6 p.m., Talk Radio NYC, Planet Paco Lolo, a less taboo view.
Are you passionate about the conversation around racism? Hi, I'm Reverend Dr. TLC, host of the Dismantle Racism Show, which airs every Thursday at 11 a.m. Eastern on talkradio.nyc. Join me and my amazing guests as we discuss ways to uncover, dismantle, and eradicate racism. That's Thursdays at 11 o'clock a.m. on talkradio.nyc.
Are you a small business trying to navigate the COVID-19 related employment laws? Hello, I'm Eric Sauver, employment law business law attorney and host of the new radio show, Employment Law Today. On my show, we'll have guests to discuss the common employment law challenges business owners are facing during these trying times. Tune in on Tuesday evenings from 5 p.m. to 6 p.m. Eastern Time on talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC at www.talkradio.nyc. Now broadcasting 24 hours a day.
Hi, we're back with Victoria and Juliet on Extra Innings, covering all the bases. Juliet, when I spoke to you the other day, you said you were in Mexico. Is that where you are right now?
Yes, I'm in San Cristobal de las Casas.
Uh-huh. So how did you get there? What, are you on a trip? You've been there for a while, you said.
It's a pilgrimage of sorts. I've been traveling Mexico for the past 3 months. I'm going back in a week to the U.S.
So what's that been like for you?
It's been really interesting just to see the difference of culture and just to see, you know, other people who are traveling. And, you know, I've been getting really into different spiritual traditions and herbalism recently. So I've been learning a lot about that. Obviously, there's a very heavy tradition here of using herbal medicines and, you know, including plant medicines like ayahuasca and, you know, just normal everyday non-psychoactive medicines as well. But so I've been really delving into that recently and how the energetic component of health, you know, and there's like the mental, the physical, emotional, and then the spiritual. So just sort of exploring that.
Wow. You know, it's really interesting because a woman we had on a few weeks ago, a friend of mine named Terry, talked about doing ayahuasca about 7 or 8 different times. And so when I was listening to this rabbi talking about having attachments and, you know, doing things that you need to help yourself, he was an Orthodox rabbi. And I was really surprised that he mentioned ayahuasca as well. I never tried it and never been, but I keep hearing it's coming up in my life. I keep hearing other people talking about ayahuasca, but I think all forms of doing different kind of spiritual, herbal, whatever it is that can help to get you up to a level that you just feel more comfortable with yourself, even if it is tough. But
yeah, and I have to say, I don't think ayahuasca is for everyone. My really good friend did it recently and he was confronted with things he was not ready to see. The thing with ayahuasca, it will show you whether you are ready or not. It will bring up traumas that maybe you've suppressed in your past for a reason for protection. And it sometimes will bring things up you're not ready to process and it can cause some mental problems. So in his case, it didn't help him. I've met other people that it really helped them. I know it has helped cases of depression. So it's one of those things where, you know, it can be helpful for a lot of people, but it's definitely to be used with caution and preparation and, maybe therapy before and after all that.
I've done ayahuasca and in my experience, the person who goes with you in the journey, like the shaman or the therapist, it's incredibly important because it can help you not go into very dark places if you're going. And people think that is an enjoyable thing, and it's not. It's absolutely not. It's a hard thing. And I've done it twice, and I've done it with 2 years apart, and I loved it.
And you had like a shaman or a leader or someone to guide you.
And once was like very good and the second one was not that good. And I had more problems the second time. It was not that personal. The person was not that you know, there with you.
Present. Yeah, you have to be careful with some of these shamans because sometimes they'll just throw people into a ceremony who are not ready.
Yeah, well, my country is it's legal and it's part of my culture. I'm from the Amazonic. So you can find some kind of institutional things, kind of, not really. Lately has been like getting more, there is this media thing. So there is there are more shamans and people. So it's more difficult to know right now who to trust and who not to trust. When I did it, it was not a big fancy thing to do, so you know that the person that was with you was kind of the real thing.
So in talking about, you know, different ways to heal, I was just wondering, in terms of Juliet, in terms of the film, after the film, you started working with a distribution company, right? First Run, is that what they were called?
Yes, First Run Features.
Right. Are you still working with them, or is that?
Yes, I am currently still working with them.
Okay. So they're in New York City, right? You want to tell us a little bit about them?
Yeah, sure. They're an independent film distribution company, lots of documentaries, educational films, and foreign films as well. And we have about 400 titles. And, you know, we work with movie theaters to just have screenings, and we work with streaming platforms like Canopy, which is a library streaming platform, with different universities who want to screen our films for educational purposes. And yeah, so I've been working with them for the past couple of years, and I'm back to New York actually to work in person with them again in about a week.
So I'll be going back. While you've been in Mexico, have you been working as well, or no?
I have been working remotely.
I have. Yes.
Huh.
Yeah. So have you, Maria, when you finally saw the film of Extra Innings on the screen, what was your first impression?
That it was too long.
Too long? Okay.
Yeah. I love it. In the beginning, I love it. It felt like so personal. That was what Extra Innings always had. It's full of heart, you know. It was always full of heart, and it, you don't find so many films like that, with that level of honesty. You know, it is honesty to you.
Yeah, well,
and I think a lot of people who worked in the film was like that.
Yeah.
You know, you're drawn to that. At the end, projects find you like you are.
Basically. Yeah, yeah. That's kind of what I felt from talking to a lot of people afterwards, that, you know, they had a personal feel for the film, or just actually from reading the script. There was something personal about it. Which, honestly, I love pictures that are, that make you feel something, that you know, like Peter Travers, Rolling Stone critic, wrote, he interviewed me, and we took a bunch of his, what he said in the review, and one was something like, a film that really matters. And, you know, in one sentence, I think that says a lot about it. I find that, as time goes on from the time we, like, I cannot believe it's already been 4 years since we shot the film. And I just don't know what happened to the time 4 years ago. And, but what I found myself doing is, besides, you know, I had worked as a therapist before, and took a life coaching course, because you need a license now, and you didn't need it then. And so I've done some coaching, but I'm, also thinking about doing some talking, maybe some writing, maybe writing about the people I've been interviewing on this show, because I've really talked to so many people. Several of them, at least four or five that I know, have written books and sent me their books to read. And all of them were afflicted with some kind of malady or mental health problem, whether it was losing their child to suicide, whether it was dealing with their own attempts at suicide, and going out there now into the world and letting people know about it through books, and also speaking seminars and stuff like that. We had a great guy who's a police officer who became a sergeant, and he tried to take his life several times, and he would tell he wasn't a sergeant yet. He became a sergeant, but told his boss that he was having back problems. And that's why he had to take off. And finally, he told him the truth. And he said he wanted to tell. This is, to me, very revealing. He told the sergeant that I want to have a meeting with all the officers in the precinct and let them know, no, I wasn't out because of a bad back. I was out because I have a mental health problem and I tried to take my life. And the sergeant said, you can't do that. What will they think? And he goes, that's exactly the problem. What will they think? We're afraid of what people will think if we do something like that or feel a certain way or make an attempt like that. Because I totally believe that no one really wants to take their life, but the pain, the people that do, the pain is so severe of what they're going through that they just don't know any other way out. And it's sad. And it can be very lonely. And that's why I think it's really important to talk about it. It's so important. I mean, and yet we're not, as Dr. Rydenburg said, and talking to him many times and on the show, he said, we're not going to eradicate suicide. But, you know, like we're not, you know, but we can lessen the amount of suicide through education, through letting people know it's okay to talk about it. And you can do this and you can do that. And there's so many organizations that are out there to help. And in coming September, I want to, before this next commercial, I just want to say it's called, I've read different things, but it's Mental Health Awareness Month in September, but it's also one of the weeks is called Suicide Prevention Month, Suicide Prevention Week. So we really want to let people know more about the movie more than we ever have, because we think that this opens up people to talk about situations like that and challenges that come up. So we will come back in about another minute. And anything you guys want to talk about, what your plans are, what do you want to do, what you've been doing, let us know. People, tune in. All right, thanks so much. We'll be right back.
Hey, everybody, it's Tommy D, the Nonprofit Sector Connector, coming at you from my attic. Each week here on talkradio.nyc, I host a program, Philanthropy in Focus. Nonprofits impact us each and every day, and it's my focus to help them amplify their message and tell their story. Listen each week at 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time until 11 a.m. Eastern Standard Time right here on talkradio.nyc.
Do you feel uninformed about menopause and how it impacts on your life? Hi, I'm Pat Duckworth, women's health strategist and host of the Hot Women Rock radio show, empowering women leaders at menopause. Join me every Thursday at 10 a.m. Eastern Time, 3 p.m. UK time on talkradio.nyc for interviews with inspirational women who will share their top tips to rock your world.
Have you ever thought of reinventing yourself? Are you looking to create a new life's journey? Hi, I'm Kevin Barbaro, host of Coffee Talk XL every Tuesday night, 5, 8 p.m. Eastern on talkradio.nyc. Tune in live to hear me and my guests from a variety of different backgrounds. As a former college coach and a current full-time actor and owner of multiple companies, my show is as eclectic as my life. That's Coffee Talk XL every Tuesday night, 8 p.m. on talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC at www.talkradio.nyc. Now broadcasting 24 hours a day.
Hi, we're back with Victoria Rick and Juliette Lamond. So both of them were working on the film Extra Innings, and we are at the near the end of our podcast of Extra Innings, covering all the bases. Victoria, one of the things I read on your bio, you said that you studied script writing and philosophy. I guess that was before you came to New York. Is that right?
Yeah. Before starting acting, actually.
Oh, before you got into acting, okay.
I was doing a short film with my classmates, studying directing, and and I started putting myself in front of a camera. I've never done before that, never done theater, nothing. I used to dance though a lot. And I decided to take a class, and that class turned into a studio, 3-year studio, very serious studio. And I graduated, and since then I've done that. That doesn't mean that I haven't done other things. I was with a film project for a while. I went for like a little grant. I never did it. I still think that I can, there is something I need in that script. I think I know now what to put, but You know, it's a challenge when you go to write something like a script or a novel, you know, like your whole life.
Yeah.
That. It's not that little thing. Then I used to dance a lot too. And 2019, I broke my ACL and then got COVID, and I've been recovering since then, which is not easy emotionally, I have to say. It's very hard. But I'm acting. I'm represented. I have, tomorrow I have a shooting. Middle of September, I have a little character in another TV show. My non-union days are over. So I'm doing pretty well, actually.
Good. Well, that's great. I remember you were at our offices one day, and I got tickets to see, I don't remember his name, but do you remember we went to on 42nd Street? What's the name of that club?
What?
The Blues Club. There was a...
Oh, when we went to hear Palmas Palmieri.
Yes.
Palmieri. Oh my God, we had fun. That was so fantastic.
Yeah. It was like my friend called me and said he had 2 extra tickets he couldn't go. And you were there, and I had a feeling you might know him. And I know of him, but I never even knew his music. And we went.
He's
and we
had a great time. One of the biggest one in Latin.
What's his first name? What's his...
Palmieri.
Palmieri.
Palmas. I don't remember the name. I'm very bad with names. I don't know if you have seen it. I'm very, very bad with names.
It was at B.B. King's. I just remembered on 42nd Street.
Yep. Yeah. Right. Oh, my God. Beautiful. Thank you. Thank you so much. I'm never going to stop saying thank you for that one. It was because for me, I had all these friends that, you know, jazz and Latin goes very parallel because the musicians were the same one at the beginning. And so I was into jazz, and I have a lot of friends that were into Latin, and that's how I met him, not through Latin America, but through jazz.
Right. Well, no, it was fun. The music was great. Juliet, I want to bring up an experience that happened that was really funny during the casting of Extra Innings. And I don't know if you remember it. Well, you will remember it. We were casting people that played baseball with the Bonnies, which is the name of the team that's featured in the film. And that's the team that I played with when I was younger on the same fields where we shot the film, where they still play. So the day before, I went with Jerry Katsky, who's also been on the show, who now heads the league. And he was my coach when I was like 17, 16 years old. And I asked him if we could use some of his players for the film. And I called him up. I told him I wrote the script, and he read it, and he said, "Yeah." And then the next day, he said, "Could you do a documentary on the Bonnies, like a promotional piece?" More is what he wanted. I said, "Do you have any money?" And he goes, "No," which I had a feeling was going to say that. So he gave me his list of kids and parents that are a part of the organization. We did a crowdfunder, Indiegogo, I believe we used, and we raised maybe $5,000, and we did it for $5,000, and it was a lot of fun. So when we came to time to shoot the film, I went one day, met with Jerry, and asked a bunch of the kids that were there playing, "Hey, you guys, would you like to be in a film? This is what it's about." Briefly, we told them you'd play baseball and we would feed you. And, you know, we had maybe 2 or 3 hands come up. And I was really surprised. So I said, "Jerry, that's crazy. I mean, I thought they would all jump at it because it's going to be a feature film." So we went back maybe 2 days later, and I took Juliet with me. And it was the summertime, and she was wearing these really cute shorts. And she went there. And we went together, and Jerry was there, and she said, "Hey guys, what do you say to be in a movie?" And she was being really expressive, and you're gonna have pizza, and you're gonna play the game you love, and I'll be there, and it'll be a lot of fun, and there'll be all these people. And all of a sudden, every hand went up, and I was like, wow, isn't that something?
You gotta make it. You gotta make it sound fun, Albert. You gotta make it be like this is gonna be like a summer camp or something.
I know. And it was, you know, I'm. You're like, hey guys, you know, and it worked. And I was like, you know, it's just so funny how the way you can come across on something and who does that, you know, it's like casting. You know, you get the right person to ask for a certain thing, it can make a big difference. So. That helped us immensely by having, and then I remember we were pulling in people for extras. We were having problems with extras, and we were pulling people from everywhere. You were pulling people from the other fields.
Well, they were all unpaid extras. So I was right. Really like sending a lot of emails, just trying to see who wanted to show up in a period costume.
Right.
Without any pay.
Yeah, because we were on a low budget, and you know, when I tell the people we shot the film in 22 days, they go, "Really, 22 days?" And it amazes me that we did as much as we did in 22 days. And then we had that break at the end. I think it was about at least a week, maybe 2 weeks, until we shot the last few scenes in Montauk, and because it was raining and everything. So, but everything worked out well. And then working with Luigi, who is a wonderful cinematographer, I'm trying to get him on the show, but he's really busy right now. I want to have him and Rob be on the show together. And it's fun seeing everyone together. One of these days, it'd be nice to have a reunion, maybe when all this COVID stuff ends, or, you know, get people together. Like, I'd like to see it again in the theater. And we're still getting people, different film festivals asking to see it. By the way, we're going to be showing it in Australia in March. It was supposed to be November, December, but it got pushed because of COVID. As a matter of fact, Australia is closed for anyone to go there until at least January 2022, but they might have even made it further because they changed the shooting schedule, the screening schedule. So that's exciting. They're going to show it at least three times, but it could be more. And we showed it in London. And, you know, we've showed it in different states. You know, we had more theaters booked, but then COVID came and that blocked everything. So, but we showed it virtually a lot of times. So anyway, so Julia, you're coming back soon and you'll be working with First Run still. You'll continue with them?
Yes. Yeah, I'm going to be doing that.
And Victoria, do you have any plans coming up now?
Well, tomorrow I have a shooting. In middle September, I have a co-star in a new TV show. I wrote a play, and I'm sending it to like workshops and you know, this kind of thing to get more help.
Oh, cool! Wow, that's good.
Yeah, it's in Spanish though. That's a problem. Well, it's very poetical.
Well, you can always have someone interpret it if you want. Maybe.
Yeah, but I write poetry, and it's very abstract, and it's very difficult to
interpret that.
Translate. It's not that easy. I write quite weird.
Yeah. Well, that's.
But I think that it could be made. It's just you need another layer of capacities.
Yeah, no, I get it.
But it's fun.
Well, listen.
And I'm about to move to Harlem. We're buying a house.
Oh, congratulations. Good for you. That's wonderful. Well, listen, we're going to summarize this by saying, you know, good luck with both of you going forward. Hope to see you guys one day soon live. I'll say something. Last week was my birthday, and it was so sweet, about 10:30. I got a FaceTime call from Erica, Gertrude, and Alex, and Gertrude's husband, Robert. And it was like 10:30 at night, and hi, and they knew it was my birthday. Happy birthday. So it was very sweet of them.
So cute.
So anyway, for everyone out there, Extra Innings, if you have a chance, see the film. Again, next, this coming month is Mental Health Awareness Month. And when I say that, I think that everyone should just be aware that there's a lot of people out there who have these challenges. If you know someone like that, encourage them to get help or to talk to you, to talk to someone so they don't feel that alone. And hopefully the film makes it, you know, a bit of a difference, as well as people talking about it. So good luck to everyone, and speak to you soon. And, have a great night, and thanks for being on the show tonight.
Thanks, Albert, and bye, Julie.
Thank you.
Bye. Have a good night.
Bye. Good night.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC. Uplift, educate, empower.
Do you run or are ready to open your own business? Hi, I'm Jeremiah Fox. I've been operating and opening small business for the last 25 years, and I'm the host of the new show, The Entrepreneurial Web. Tune in every Friday at noon Eastern Time for insights and stories on the nuances of running small business right here on Fridays at noon, talkradio.nyc.
Do you love or are you intrigued about New York City and its neighborhoods? I'm Jeff Goodman, host of Rediscovering New York, a weekly show that showcases New York's history and its extraordinary neighborhoods. Every Tuesday live at 7 p.m., we focus on a particular neighborhood and explore its history, its vibe, its feel, and its energy. Tune in live every Tuesday at 7 p.m. on talkradio.nyc.
Did you know that nearly 1 in 5 adults in the U.S. battles mental illness? Hi, my name is Albert Dabba. I'm the host of the show Extra Innings. Extra Innings, I discuss the topics of wellness, mental health, and the experience of surviving multiple suicides within my family. Listen live every Monday at 6 p.m. Eastern to Extra Innings for discussions with sports figures, artists, mental health professionals, and many others. That's Monday at 6 p.m. Eastern on talkradio.nyc.
In a post-COVID world, you may have many unanswered questions regarding your health. Are you looking to live a healthier lifestyle? Do you have a desire to learn more about mental health and enhance your quality of life? Or do you just want to participate in self-understanding and awareness? I'm Frank R. Harrison, host of Frank About Health, and each Thursday, I will tackle these questions and work to enlighten you. Tune in every Thursday at 5 p.m. on talkradio.nyc, and I will be Frank About Health to advocate for all of us.
McElroy, host of the new podcast, Gateway to the Smokies. It airs on talkradio.nyc every Tuesday night from 6 p.m. to 7. Every episode is dedicated to memorable experiences in the Great Smoky Mountains National Park and surrounding areas. This show features experts and locals who will expound upon the richness of culture, history, and adventure that awaits you in the Smokies. Tune in every Tuesday from 6 p.m. to 7 on talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC. Uplift, educate, empower.